Welcome back to another episode of Big Money Energy, where we talk to super successful and self-made people to find out exactly how they did it, how they went from nothing to something. I'm Ryan Serhant, and today I'm joined by New York Times best-selling author and host of the School of Greatness podcast, Lewis Howes. We discuss the importance of having coaches and mentors throughout life, how to look within to find the confidence you need to be your best self, and what it takes to go from being unemployed, sleeping on your sister's couch, to becoming one of the most influential podcasters on the planet. Let's get into it. Welcome to another episode. Today is a super, super special day. One, it is snowing in the city again. I don't remember the last time it snowed so much in New York City, but that means I don't have to go show properties. It means I can sit here and I can talk to one of my favorite people, a former professional football player, keynote speaker, now media entrepreneur, high performance business coach, everyone, Lewis Howes. We first met when my first book, Sell It Like Serhant, came out, and he was gracious enough to help me launch the book in Los Angeles back when people used to talk to people in person and we used to have a book events. That was really, really cool. You guys know him from everything. One of the biggest podcasts in the world, The School of Greatness, which we'll get into, recognized by the White House and President Obama as one of the top 100 entrepreneurs in the country under 30. He's met Tom Brady. Okay, that's really, really important to me, amongst many, many other things. Without further ado, Lewis Howes, thank you so much for being here, man.
My man, appreciate you, and congrats on the new book. Excited to have you on my show soon to talk about it.
Yeah, let's do it. Before we start, though, you know, I've been on other people's podcasts for a long time, right? Million Dollar Listing started 10 years ago.
Wow. Man, you were like, what, 22 when that happened?
Yeah, I was 26.
Wow.
And now time goes by real fast. And kind of right around that time, a couple of years later, right, you just celebrated your 8-year anniversary of School of Greatness, yeah?
Yeah. This year, we just celebrated 8 years.
Yeah. Last month. Over 1,000 episodes.
1,000 episodes, man. It's crazy. And it goes by fast. Like you said, I remember the first episode. You probably remember your first episode, and you were probably terrible on TV, and I was terrible on podcasting. And, you know, look at us now, so.
Can we go back, though, to the beginning before I get into all the questions I have about your kind of career, right, and your professional life and what a lot of things mean to you. But you graduate college, you go into arena football, you get hurt. Whole life leads up to that one moment. What do you do?
For me, in that moment, it was an identity crisis because my whole identity was tied to being an athlete and being known and being valued for my athletic abilities. And so when I'm not able to do that anymore, and that's the only identity I have, I had to learn the hard way. It took a couple of years to figure out, okay, my identity does not define me, and I can always reinvent my identity. So imagine if you lost all the ability to sell real estate or talk about real estate or buy real estate or invest in it. Just for whatever reason, you lost that ability. And that's been 10 years of your life. For a lot of people in transitioning sports into real world afterwards, they get depressed. They get unsure of themselves, and they don't have that same confidence when they had that identity into the next stage. And I lacked the confidence. For a couple of years, I was on my sister's couch. I didn't have any money. I was trying to figure out how to get a job. This was 2007 to 2009 when the economy was crashing. Yeah, everything. So for me, I didn't have a college degree yet. I eventually went back and finished, but I really didn't know what to do. And so I just used what I learned from sports and said, what got me to being a professional athlete? What allowed me to accomplish All-American status in a couple sports and break records and all these things was having incredible coaches. And why would I do life or career or business alone without a coach? Because this is what I know. And in order to get to the top, I've needed coaches. In order to stay at the top, the greatest athletes in the world invest in better coaches. You know, Kobe, Jordan, LeBron, they don't say, I'm the best. I don't need a coach. They say, no, I'm going on the team that has the best coach because I want to win multiple championships. I don't want to just get to the top and that's it. And so I started to look for mentors. And originally it was people that I'd already met from, you know, professors at school or whatever. But then I started reaching out on LinkedIn to finding kind of local entrepreneurs in Columbus, Ohio, which is where I was based at the time, where I'm from. And started reaching out to them and essentially begging them to mentor me because I had nothing to offer them. I had no skills. I had no career. I had no value except for a curious heart and a listening ear that I learned how to ask the right questions so that people would reply to my emails on LinkedIn, so that people would go to coffee with me or actually take me to lunch and pay for my lunch because I couldn't afford it. And I would find these really successful kind of local leaders spending their time with me as a 23, 24-year-old punk with no job, no nothing. And it was all around positioning. And I positioned my LinkedIn profile in a right way to get people to reply to me. I positioned my email messaging the right way so people would respond to me. And that positioning created proximity, where then I had access to people, people that had skills, people that had money, people that had job opportunities, people that had experience. So I could learn from that proximity and from the people that had that knowledge. And that was the thing that, out of necessity, because I didn't have money, I was living off my sister's couch, eating her food, not paying rent for a year and a half. But she gave me a gift after a year and a half of not paying for anything or contributing. She said, it's time for you to leave. You either need to pay rent or you need to leave. And it was the greatest gift she gave me because it created urgency and it created opportunities to break through. Because I probably would be on that couch for another year, 2 years, 3 years. I was a grown man at 25, 24, 25 at that time. And, you know, I didn't want to live off my sister, but it was also like, I don't have to work hard. So she created the sense of like, okay, there's, A, they have to go live in the streets. But what I did is I begged my brother to let me stay at his place. And he...
Good sized family there. Exactly. You got tons of couches.
Exactly. And he gave me a gift. He said, listen, you got to pay $250 a month for your room. I was like, okay, I got to do something. I got to figure out how do I make $300, right? So that I can pay here and also buy some food. And it just got me working a little bit more. Okay, what do I need to do? Do I go get a job? Do I go try to make money? How do I make money? And it went down that path of just next steps.
That's insane. But that is a really, really, really cool story. What was your relationship to money at that time? Because you didn't have a whole lot of it.
Afraid, uneducated, ignorant, needy. I desired it, but I was also scared of it. I didn't know how to make money. I never made money before 25, really. I mean, I was a truck driver for a number of months, making $250 a week, driving six.
Truck driver?
I drove Napa auto car parts from Columbus, Ohio to Cincinnati and back every day. I dropped them off, take 2.5 hours to get there, do about a 30 to 45 minute pickup of new parts and bring them back to the Columbus warehouse. And so I was driving the largest truck before, it was kind of like the massive U-Haul before you needed a trucking license. And it was miserable. It was a miserable experience. But I also was like, how do I make the most of this 6 hour commute daily driving car parts? And so what I did is I said, I mean, I would just play crazy games in my mind. The truck only went 55 miles an hour when I put the pedal to the metal. And so everyone's passing me. In the middle of Ohio, I don't know if you've been to Ohio, but there's just cornfields for hours. So there's nothing really to look at. And it's where I learned how to salsa dance. I learned salsa dancing as a truck driver.
What?
In my mind. So I would.
That's some Inception stuff.
I wanted to learn how to salsa dance because I was terrified of it. And I went to this like jazz club one night that had salsa dancing, and I was just blown away by all the Latin people who were there dancing salsa. And I was like, this is the most intimidating thing I've ever seen, but it's also probably the coolest thing I've ever seen. And I kept going back to this place once a week. They would do salsa dancing. I'd go back once a week and I would just watch. I literally was the creeper. I wasn't trying to be a creeper, but I would sit in the corner and just be like, this is amazing. This is mesmerizing. And I love the music. I love the culture, the people, the language, everything. And when I started truck driving, I said, okay, I'm going to teach myself salsa dancing. I had someone burn me a CD of the greatest hits of salsa songs. And I listened to this for 6 hours a day. And I would practice on YouTube back then. YouTube had this channel called Addicted to Salsa, which taught you salsa tutorials before its time. And I would watch these at night. I would practice in the mirror. I would then rehearse these moves in my mind for 6 hours a day while listening to the music. So I was trying to figure out, how can I learn a skill making money doing something I don't like? And that was a process. I didn't know how to make money. I was a truck driver. I was a bouncer on the weekends, making, I don't know, maybe $150 a weekend at a nightclub. And I never was entrepreneurial. I didn't have the lemonade stand. I didn't do the baseball card thing. I didn't garage sale, none of that stuff. I relied on my dad to kind of be like, okay, you know, here's $20 or $100 when you need it or whatever. He never gave me a lot of money, but it was always provided like I had a house and food. I didn't need anything else. But when I was 20, when you're 25 and you're sleeping on your sister's couch, you're not as cool anymore. And that's when I said, I've got to learn financial literacy. I've got to learn and understand what it means to make money, how to make money on your own, what it looks like to get a job, how to manage my personal finances, just all the basics that no one teaches in school.
So what was your first job then? Now you're crashing, you're paying your brother. You had to figure out how to make money, right?
I did.
And the podcast came years later, didn't it?
Yeah, years later. That was actually the dream. Back then when I was on my sister and brother's couch, I was like, what do I want to be doing? I had this idea of back in 2007, 8, and 9, I was like, I just want to interview the most fascinating people in the world and ask them how they got there. Because wouldn't it be cool if you just get paid to just ask questions of smart people? But I was like, no one will listen to me at this moment. No one would. I don't have any credibility. You know, why would they show up to my show? Why would these people even talk to me? So I knew there was something I wanted and spent about 5 years building a business, online marketing business, to where things started to take off pretty quickly. It took about 2 years of being broke and on my sister's couch and then my brother's place until I made really my first dollars online. And I remember for those 2 year period, I was obsessing over LinkedIn. I was obsessing over it because I was connecting with these thought leaders in my local community. And eventually people started reaching out to me saying, hey, Lewis, can you show me how to use LinkedIn for, you know, connecting to people or generating leads and traffic? And since I was just doing it all day long, I started writing articles about it. I eventually wrote a book about LinkedIn. I was one of the first people to write a book about it in 2009. And I started hosting LinkedIn networking events. And so I hosted a LinkedIn networking event using my connections, messaging 2009, messaging people one at a time. I think I started my first one late 2008. And I literally just messaged everyone I knew one at a time, custom email message on LinkedIn and said, hey, and they had an events feature. So I said, hey, we're hosting a LinkedIn networking event. Here it is. Please bring three friends. It's free. You know, all this stuff. And I sold four sponsorships at $250 for like a table, like a little booth. And I called up
4 months of rent, baby.
Exactly. And I called up a few local restaurants and I said, what's the worst night of the week for you when no one comes in? They were like Tuesday night or Wednesday night or something. And I said, can I have it for free if I can bring people, you know, 100 people to this? And they were like, sure. And they had food and drinks and bar and all that stuff. And I said, you can keep all the money. I just want to have the space. And the first event we did, we had 300 to 350 people show up. I made $1,000 on the sponsorships. But the coolest thing was the connections and everyone thanked me afterwards saying, wow, like I met so-and-so and now we're going to talk about doing this. I met so-and-so who I'm going to hire, whatever it is. I became essentially the champion of everyone's problems and the solutions. And I was like, wow, I wonder if I did this again and I charged for people to come. So I charged $5 at the door and I was like, I don't know if anyone's going to come. And we had more people show up. And I was like, oh, wow. Okay. So I sold sponsorships the second time and I charged $5. I wonder if I can charge $10. And I just started going to the next level. Okay. We made $10 at the door, sponsorships. Then I started to build a relationship with these restaurants and I said, hey, will you give me 10 or 15% commission on the food and bar? And they were like, yeah, this is the worst night of the week. No one's coming in. Of course. And so I was getting three levels of revenue from one event. Then I was doing one-on-one consulting for people that said, hey, can you show me how to do this on LinkedIn? So I was charging $100 and $200 and $300 a session for doing one-on-one. Then I was like, okay, let me write a book around this so I can have something to sell at these events. So now I had five levels of revenue and I just kept thinking, okay, what else can I do? Then I started making money off of connecting people and getting commissions on deals. And I just kept thinking, how can I make more money with one event? What can I do? Then the thing that really transformed everything is when I was branding myself and positioning myself in the social media world as the LinkedIn guy. I was like, everyone's talking about being a social media expert. I know social media platforms pretty well, but not as well as LinkedIn. And everyone was like, I'm a social media expert online, their bio. And I was just like, no, I'm the LinkedIn king. Like, I don't care about anything else, but LinkedIn. And because I positioned myself as that, that wasn't what I wanted long term. I wanted to do a show. But at the moment, I knew I needed to position myself as an expert in one thing as opposed to an expert at all things. And by doing that, opportunities started to come to me. Every social media conference said, we need a LinkedIn, you know, room. Who's the guy who can come speak? Well, I know Lewis, and Lewis is writing articles about this, and Lewis has wrote a book about this, and Lewis is hosting events on LinkedIn. Let's bring Lewis in. So I was doing that, and then eventually I met a guy at a conference, and he asked me to come on one of his webinars. And I didn't know what a webinar was in 2009, but I said, let's do it. He was a pretty big name in kind of the space at the time. And he said, I need you to do a presentation about LinkedIn. It's going to be a free event. You're going to present. And at the end, I want you to sell something. I want you to sell a course or a program. And this is back in 2009 when there was no course platforms. It was really hard to build a website back in 2009 and put stuff together. I had no clue what I was doing. And I said, okay, I don't have the time to put together a course or a training, but what I'll do is I'll put together a PayPal link and I'll give a free presentation. And then at the end, I'll say, hey, for anyone who wants more advanced training on LinkedIn, like, pay me here. I charge $150. Pay me here. And what I'll do is 3 weeks of more online training, like on a live webinar. I'll just give you access to a private link and I'll teach you this, this, and this every week. And at the end, and I was horrible. It was my first time giving a presentation. I had no clue what I was doing. The slides were janky and, you know, I was stuttering the whole time. But at the end, I closed down the webinar presentation. I opened up my Gmail and it was probably the most beautiful thing I've ever seen in my life. More than any girl I'd ever seen. It was my entire email on my screen that said, you've received payment. Every line said, you received payment. You received payment. I was like, I was literally screaming. I was in my brother's place at this time, living for $250 a month. And there was $6,200 in my PayPal account in minutes. And I was like, I am the richest man in the world. I could do this every day for the rest of my life. If I get to teach about LinkedIn and make $6,200, I'll do this all day long. And for the next 6 years, that's pretty much all I did. I said, okay, how do I become a better teacher? How do I master LinkedIn more? How do I understand webinars? How do I learn about online marketing, copywriting? How do I create relationships and affiliate partnerships to drive traffic? How do I buy traffic? How do I do more of this thing? And I just obsessed over becoming better at that. And after about 4 or 5 years, I got like tired of just talking about LinkedIn. I was like, this is not what I want to do. Like my dream has been to do this interview thing. And I don't know the best platform. Like I'd like a TV show, but I'm still not really known. I'm known as a LinkedIn guy, but not known in anything else. And so I took about a year off where I sold the company to my business partner at that time, had saved pretty much everything. I pretty much lived like I was on my sister's couch still, saved. Didn't have a car, didn't have a TV, just like walked everywhere, saved money. And then I had a couple years of runway where I was like, I could do whatever. And I was like, I really want to do this interview show. And podcasting back in 2012 wasn't a thing. It was like Joe Rogan was on there, some weird like basement tech shows were on there or something, but no one knew even how to go download a podcast. But I had two friends that had just launched one in middle of 2012. And I just moved to LA at the time for a girl. Didn't work out quickly. And I said, but let me stay here. And I was driving in LA traffic and it was miserable. And I was like, man, I just kind of feel stuck in my life right now. I feel stuck that I moved here for this girl and it's not working out. Like, I was kind of resenting myself. And I was really frustrated because I was supposed to go meet someone a mile away and it took like 2 hours to get there in a car. And I was like, this is exhausting. And I go, how are people doing this every day? Stuck in their car, stuck in their life. Like, there's got to be a way to serve people who feel this type of stuckness, whether it be literally in a car or just in their life. And I said, God, why don't I just create a free show, like a podcast? I heard a couple of friends are doing it. Let me call them. So I called them in the car ride, literally, and asked them both, like, what is this podcasting thing? Is it worth it? Is it going to be a waste of time? And both of them said it was the most fun they were having of anything they're doing in their business. It was the most qualified leads they were getting for the things that they were selling eventually. And they were just having a blast doing it. And I was like, if these guys could do it, I could probably figure this out. And probably about 4 or 5 months later, I launched the show. And end of January 2013, so 8 years ago. And it's just been a figuring it out process every day since.
Crazy. You know, I could listen to you for a year straight, I think. Like, I don't even have to make noise. Your story is just so interesting. You skipped over one thing, just really quick. You coaches got you to a certain point. Did you end up finding that life coach, business coach, or mentor when you were kind of stuck in there? Or was it mostly just leaning on friends?
I had three mentors at the time. One was, it's funny, at the time also, when I just finished playing football, I had to have a surgery on my wrist because I broke a bone in my wrist. And so I was in a full arm cast from my shoulder to my fingers. I kind of looked like the kid from Rookie of the Year that like had
arm up. And then when it got out, he's like,
It was like a wet noodle. I couldn't move my arm when it got out. I didn't have power or strength. And so I was in this cast for 6 months. It was miserable. And during that time is when I was just on LinkedIn because I couldn't really work out. I didn't have a job, nothing. On my sister's couch. And I reached out to a few people. One was a former like headmaster of the school I went to, like the college I went to, that I became close with. He was an Olympic qualifying athlete, all this stuff. So I kind of connected him over sports. He was my kind of spiritual leadership compass. Great family man, had success in business. Then I reached out. I had invented a product during this time that I called the cast comfy. Because this cast I had to wear for so long was smelly. I don't know if you've ever broken a bone and had a cast, but it
smells
smelly after a week, dirty. It's like scraping.
You just
want to
like rip it off. Yeah.
Exactly. And I was like, there's got to be a better solution if someone's wearing a cast so it doesn't look and smell dirty. And so I went on Alibaba at the time, and I had no money except for like $100 or something. And I spent, I think it was like, $70 to get a couple samples. I designed a sample of, I was like, there needs to be something you can put over this. And I actually still have them. And I was like, I need a double thickness sweatband, like an arm wristband, but 7 times the length. And so I was just kind of designing this thing on a piece of paper, like uploaded it to Alibaba, found some manufacturers in China. And I was like, can you make this and send it to me in Ohio? And 6 weeks later, I got like my first prototype. And I was like, this is amazing. I had different colors. I had different lengths. And I was like, I need someone who can help me design this better, package it, sell it, you know, market it, all this stuff. I have no idea how to do any of this. And so I met someone at the time who knew an inventor and begged this inventor to meet with me and showed him my design and everything. I had it there. And he ended up mentoring me for the next like 6 months. He was like, come into the office like a few days a week, ask me questions, like, and work for me for free, essentially. And I'll help you launch this thing. I'll help you get it off the ground. We ended up not getting that off the ground, but I ended up learning about product design, product development, naming. He's a master of like naming, trademarking. We'd go to design shows together. So I would go to trade shows with him and just learned about like the business of networking. And I just learned about how to take an idea in your mind and make it a physical reality and manifest it from every process, from idea to manufacturing to licensing to PR, everything. So that was an amazing 6 month experience. He was my creative mentor of like, how do I take an idea and manifest it into a physical form? And then I, at the salsa clubs, because I started going salsa dancing a lot and teaching myself salsa dancing, I met another guy who was a professional speaker. And at the time, I was terrified of public speaking. I could not even speak in front of an audience of 4 people without stuttering and being nervous. And I was like, man, you go around the country and you get paid to speak. That sounds amazing, but I could never do it. And he mentored me and said, you need to join Toastmasters. You need to overcome the fear, learn the basics of public speaking. And I want you to go every week for a year to Toastmasters until you feel confident enough in presenting without notes, without preparation in front of an audience. And I went every single week for a year where I would film it. I would get feedback from him, all this stuff, until I finally overcame the fear. And I didn't know that speaking would be a thing in my future because I was terrified of it. But that mentor and coach really guided me to overcome those fears. So those three were really instrumental. But then every year I'm hiring new coaches. You know, I'm paying for experts at different levels to help me in my health and wellness, business strategy, relationships, therapy, inner work, all that stuff. So I'm always looking for great coaches.
Where do you think your, or what do you attribute your sense of enthusiasm to? Like, you have great energy. I think one thing that the people
Big money energy, man. You got to have that, you know?
I think one thing people are attracted to you about, and it's so fun to listen to you and just to listen to your interviews that you do on the podcast. I'm sure why people take your courses and everything is that you have this amazingly authentic and new sense of energy almost every day. You grammed a tweet where you said, mindset is everything. The way you think affects your energy and actions. Change your thoughts and your life will start to change, which is right. So you're just talking about, you know, the things you think about now as part of your work end up becoming the things that you're doing 2 to 3 years from now, as long as you put in the work. But you mentioned that word energy, and then I watch you even now on that amazing high resolution camera that you have that my team needs to figure out. You've got that incredible energy. Is it, do you credit your parents or just excitement for life? Is it something you developed because you knew you needed to have it?
I think I always had something, like there was always something inside of me. And I don't know if everyone else feels this. Maybe you felt this as a kid, Ryan, that I always felt like, okay, I don't know why I'm here. And there were many times that I would get in trouble as a kid and get sent to the principal's office. And I would tell them all the time, I wish I were dead. I had a darker childhood in a lot of ways. I mean, I was sexually abused as a five-year-old. It took me 25 years to open up about it and start sharing and start healing. So I lived with a lot of resentment and anger in moments of my life. But I had this duality of like passion and childlike joy and energy as well. But when someone triggered me, it was like, don't ever try to take advantage of me or abuse me. Otherwise, I was like, I'm going to destroy you. And I didn't understand why, but I was sexually abused as a kid. My brother went to prison when I was 8 for 4.5 years. So almost every weekend, I was in a prison visitor room with a room full of inmates and their families. And because there was visiting hours for my brother. And so there was just a lot of, I was in special needs classes until I graduated college after 7 years of college, all the way from as long as I can remember. So there was a lot of, inner suffering that I created myself based on experiences. And I just wanted to be happy. I wanted to be joyful. I was a loving kid, but also when I was triggered, there was a lot of anger and resentment. And it took me many years to learn how to heal and learn how to accept and love myself. And that was about 8 years ago when I learned that process. And I'm still in that process. I'm not perfect. But I've also had a deep sense of gratitude at the same time for my life. So there was like a knowing. Even though I was like angry and upset and resentful as a younger kid, the older I got, I was just like, God, I'm supposed to do something for the world. I don't know what it is, but I know my life is more meaningful than being a dumb kid and just being an athlete. But it's, I don't know what it is, but I need to figure it out. And that listening to that voice, trusting it, or that knowingness is what's allowed me to wake up every day. Literally, I kid you not, with just so much gratitude that I have another day to express myself, to enjoy life, to meet cool people, to share what I've learned, to learn new stuff. I mean, I woke up this morning, 7 a.m. I did a Spanish class because I committed to learning Spanish. And I've been doing it for 6 months, this one-on-one Spanish class. And I have someone that teaches me on Zoom. And for 20 years, Ryan, I've been telling myself I want to learn Spanish. 20 years. Every year I say, I'm going to buy this course. I'm going to download this learning app. I'm going to take this thing. And I try it, and it's so hard on my brain that I get exhausted. And I'm like, it's the hardest thing I've ever done. And the middle of last year, I said, you know what? Every year I tell myself I'm going to learn this Spanish. And every year it's New Year's Eve. And I say, I haven't done squat. And I feel like I always let myself down. And I said to myself this year, I was like, I don't care if this takes me 10 years to learn. Like I need to stop speeding up the process of being fluent in Spanish. And I need to enjoy the process of like just a small little win. You're like just figuring out one thing every class and being okay with sucking. And I tell you what, the first 6 months have been the most challenging, humbling thing for me because I feel like I've gotten nowhere. But today, literally this morning, was the first morning where I was like, I'm understanding some of these things. Maybe I'm a slower learner and maybe it's extremely challenging based on how I learn. But man, I'm like, it just felt good to be like, okay, even though I'm probably not going to be fluent for many, many years, I understand more than I did 6 months ago, and I can be proud of the progress. And that's been fun.
Dude, I am so excited for the future day, whenever that's going to
be.
Let's go. When you put out your one episode at School of Greatness.
Bienvenidos.
In complete Spanish. Exactly. It's going to be awesome.
It'll be amazing.
You'll be like, I don't even understand how I'm here right now, but this is happening.
I know, man.
It'll be awesome.
Yeah.
Something you also said, you spend so much time on kind of one-on-one with people, whether they're your coaches or the people that work with you or kind of students and stuff. And I remember when you and I met a couple years ago, you know, you're on your phone, and it's like, what are you doing? You're like answering DMs. It's like answering DMs. I just remember the look you gave me, and this is probably just, you know, a random moment, but it's like one of those moments that stuck with me. It's like, holy shit. Like, he put so much passion and care into the responses to total strangers on social media, where I think you even said, like, you respond to almost everybody.
Still, even this morning, I was responding to DMs. Yeah.
Dude, that is commitment.
I don't know if it's the smartest use of my time, but I, you know, you're probably smarter by not doing it, but I feel like with the stage I'm at in my life, I'm trying to be as connected to as many people as possible. It's I want to have a pulse of what people are saying and what their challenges are, what their, you know, their feedback is, what's working, what's not working, so that I can be like, okay, I never want to lose touch and think I've figured it out and think I've made it or think I've mastered something, because the beginner's mind for me has always benefited me at any stage of my life. And when I feel like I'm the man, that's when I slip up. That's when I make mistakes. That's when my audience can feel that, okay, he's got a big head now and he's not, you know, caring and compassionate. So if I'm not constantly reminding myself, the world will remind me in a way that's not as pleasant.
I have so many questions for you, and I'm never going to ask them all because we're going to run out of time. But what are you bullish on in the 20s? Like, where do you think the world goes? Where does the world go for podcasting? Like, what's this? What is this business?
I'm bullish on team. And I've realized that I've gotten so far with a very small, limited team before the last year. And a lot of it just being myself and saying, I'm going to bet. I was betting on me. I was bullish on me. But I realized what got me here won't necessarily be the thing that's going to get me to the next level of where my vision is, my mission. And so I know that I need amazing people on our team. And I go back to sports, you know, I need all-stars. So I need people that are invested in a mission, who are hungry, excited, just like me. And that's what we've been investing in. We brought on, I think, 7 or 8 people in the last 6 months. And I'm looking to bring on another 7 people in the next 3 to 4 months. So I've been learning the skill of, you know, being a better coach to team members, as opposed to me being coached and being the star player. How do I now coach people? I've never really done that. You know, I have a little bit, but I've never done it in like my business context. And so learning how to build an amazing team, because the more I spend time, I mean, you're around a lot of wealthy people, successful people who've scaled businesses. They don't get $1 billion exit or $100 million exit with 5 people on the team. I mean, that's probably extremely rare. It's like, yeah, we got 300 employees. We have 1,000 employees. We have 70 employees. It's just, you can't do it all on your own. And so for me, it's how do I build team better? How do I build culture better so that they're integrated with each other and feeling connected without me? And how do we reach more people in the service of what we're creating? So that's what I'm excited about, building team, because then I know that's the thing that's going to get us from, you know, 13 million downloads a month to 100 million downloads a week. And the mission is to serve 100 million people weekly to help them improve their life. And I can't do that alone. I can't do it with a small team. I need the right team who is all in on the mission to help us create more meaningful content that is scalable, that has better distribution, production value, all that stuff. So it's scaling every aspect of the team and the different tentacles we have in our business. And also, I don't know if people have bought your book yet, but it just came out. Congrats on the success. I've been diving through it, man. I really like everything you're sharing in there. And so for me, if people haven't bought the book, they need to buy the book, Big Money Energy, because it's a game changer. And I love how you talk about confidence in there, because I think a lot of people don't have the ability to believe in themselves. The skill of learning how to believe in yourself is one of the greatest skills that we can have. And it doesn't matter how much experience you have. It doesn't matter the credentials and years, all this stuff. But and you teach that skill well in the book. So I want people to to get that and buy a couple copies from their friend as well. So
thanks for the plug, man.
Of course, man. And I can't wait to have you on our show. And I'm gonna ask you things that no one's ever asked you, and I'm gonna get you to share things you've never shared before. So
great.
People should listen to that too.
All right, man. Go about your day. Keep crushing it. Keep being great. I will talk to you soon.
My man. See ya.
If you're ready to take action today based on Lewis Howes' entire blueprint for how he got to where he is, go to bigmoneyenergy.com/podcast to download an action plan that I put together for you, as well as the show notes. That's bigmoneyenergy.com/podcast. Find more podcasts like Big Money Energy on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts. Big Money Energy is hosted by me, Ryan Serhant. It's produced by Mike Coscarelli and Joe Laresca, and executive produced by Lindsay Hoffman.